This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 229 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, Scott Cam. No, sorry, Glyn Lavender.
Nope. I am a handyman now.
So are you.
For those in the know who know.
I'll leave it to our international listeners to Google Scott Cam.
We may relate my special week of becoming a man this week. We may relate that little story in a minute. How are you, my friend?
I am well. And yourself?
I'm as happy as a happy man that's really happy.
Fantastic. That's good to hear. That's good to hear.
Absolutely.
But you're in better health than your wife.
Well, you know, my wife has been especially unwell this week with some. She had pharyngitis and laryngitis all at the same time, which I'm told is not a lot of fun.
Right.
And from a woman who gave birth to two children, didn't even say the word ow at any time.
Wow.
Drug free. To staggering around in pain and squinting at everything. That's a fair sign just how sick she was.
So wow.
In 15 years, I've never seen the poor woman so sick. So.
Well, I hope she's feeling better.
Yeah, well, she's a million times better than she was, which means she's still incredibly sick.
Right.
But she can breathe and swallow properly again now. Her throat closed over so far that to give her steroids to try and open them up again.
Wow.
There goes her tour de France for the year, I guess. But you know, she's on the steroids. Yeah, that or gives her a better chance.
There we go.
So she's well on the way to mending, which is good. So
good stuff.
So hence the delay for our recording this week. It'll come out, I'm sure, in the same time. But we're recording on a Friday night rather than a Tuesday night because I had to do the husbandly thing and shove in the bedroom, keep the door closed, so I didn't have to get cash at myself. All the subtle sentimental stuff you do as a husband. Keep away from me, don't touch me. So that's been my week. But just following on from your entry, and I had a special little thing happen this week. As I said, I did become a man this week.
Right.
At the age of 48.7, I changed a washer and a tap.
Right.
Yeah, I changed a washer and a tap all by myself. And, that was, all it took was, a YouTube video. I had to go up to the local hardware store to buy, I had to go and ask for a washer changer, a thinger.
Right.
And they said, an adjustable spanner? I said, if that's what it's called. So they gave me, here's the thing, though. Shows what things are worth this day and age. I could buy one for 15.
Yeah.
Or five for 19.
Five adjustable spanners.
Yeah, but five different sizes. One sort of medium-sized one for 20. Or five that included the medium-sized one plus bigger and smaller for only $5 more. Same brand, same everything. Of course, not that I'll ever use them because there's only so many washers to change.
Isn't it ironic that you would need five different sizes of an adjustable spanner?
Well,
if it's adjustable, why do you need five different sizes?
When you put it like that, they saw me coming. They squeezed $5 out of me.
Totally.
No, I'm sure there's going to be times where the washers are going to be the smaller sink space or something, where you need that wee one. I don't know, but it was too good a bargain to miss.
They've looked at you and they've gone, that guy's never been in a hardware store in his life.
They're all pointing and said, he's asking for? He's asking for a washer changer, I think. I think those people on YouTube led me astray with what to ask for.
That is hilarious.
So I changed. It took longer to watch the video three times to see what they actually were doing than to actually do the job. So I was rather impressed. I was walking tall for the rest of the day. Let's put it that way. Chest out now. She was strutting. Like a rooster in its cage. I was a pretty happy man.
Excellent.
You're talking about the kid who got kicked out of. Out of woodwork class in the second class in high school and never allowed back in again. I mean, that was the extent of my handyman abilities before this. One and a half classes of handyman work.
Why did you get kicked out?
You fire one nail gun at a teacher's head 8 times, and what do they do? Kick you out. It's unbelievable. I missed. Not like a trying, but I'm...
No sense of humour, those woodwork teachers.
Unbelievable, you know. So, yeah, they sent me to remedial class. Apparently, I was fairly disruptive as a child. I find it hard to believe myself. But I was fairly disruptive in class, so they sent me to this remedial class where we basically ate foods of the world and listened to music from around the world.
Right.
Serious, the teacher would bring like a different cheese every week. We'd eat cheese and listen to music from around the world.
Really?
Every week, and I was supposed to be in handyman class.
Oh, what?
Oh, it was very funny. Good times.
Yeah, okay.
Good times. The type of cheeses. I never knew there was so many cheeses. It inspired me so much. I actually wrote a song about cheeses. So it was educated. Yeah, it's called Give Cheese a Chance. Sung to the lyrics of John Lennon's Give Peace a Chance, of course.
You are familiar with the cheese shop sketch, aren't you, from Monty Python?
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, so we're right out of it. Yeah. Don't get much call for it round here.
Not much call for it.
It's the single most popular cheese in the world. Not round here, it's not. What is then? Ilchester.
Is it?
Oh, yes, sir. Very popular.
Staggeringly popular in the Manusquare.
We
do.
I will say one thing, though.
Yeah.
I did learn something in my cheese class. Yeah. I know. Yeah. What cheese is made backwards?
I have a feeling there's a really corny punchline coming to this. Tell me.
Eat 'em.
Nice.
That's the perfect question for the trivia, if you're doing a trivia.
Nice.
Anyway.
Now, getting on to the podcast. This podcast is supposedly about photography.
Have you been doing any since we last spoke?
I have not.
You've been post-processing a few I assume.
I've been doing a lot of post-processing, yes.
I checked your blog out for like 2 days, 2 or 3 days of your blog.
Oh, did you?
I did.
You just looked at the pictures, though.
Of course, yeah. It's like a Playboy. You don't read the words. Cartoons and the pictures. That's all you're there
That's
for.
That's it.
Yeah. No, so, yeah, I was flicking through, so I was aware of what you've been doing.
Oh, cool.
So I had a few nights of insomnia. I needed to get some sleep. So I thought, well, what can I do to help me get sleep? Oh, you know, Bruce's blog. Seconds later, back. What a treat. So if any of the listeners out there have kids who can't sleep, hey, BruceWilliamsPhotography.com. Hit the blog button.
You're a cruel man.
You know, not honest, Bruce.
Exactly.
Nothing honest. You know? But I always say this, though. Yeah. I'd never say anything behind someone's back I wouldn't say to their face or on their podcast.
Fair enough.
Some of the stuff were really good. Did you learn anything? When going through and having to put it out as a story, as a blog, did you learn more, gain some insights into shooting that could be handy to talk about to fill in the time, because we've got nothing else to talk about?
To be honest, no, I don't think I did.
Throw that out there.
We've got a couple of listener emails that we'll get to.
Okay, yeah, just making sure I've got a bit of fleshed out 5 minutes worth of stuff there. Nothing, you've got nothing from going through all those photos that piqued your interest, got you excited?
Oh, look, I'm very happy with what I've come back with photographically.
Well, that's a start.
But you asked, was there
nothing
anything...
Coming back and being just...
Exactly. But you asked, did I learn anything during the process of, you know, post-processing the images about shooting? And I don't think I did. I don't think I would have shot anything differently.
Okay, maybe phrasing in a different... Yeah, would you have shot something a different way? If you look at, I wish I'd done it this way instead. It was any sort of... You know, when I was actually out shooting, I'd love to have... I wish I'd thought to do that. Because I often find when I'm looking at my photos, it's like, oh, why didn't I just do this as well? You know, why didn't I stand there or try that? Or why didn't I see that thing over there to use as a compositional point?
I don't know if I mentioned this amongst my list of things I learned from the trip last week, but one thing I have certainly been aware of as I've been post-processing is don't put faces too close to the edge of a frame when you're shooting with a 20mm wide angle.
Well, it depends how big their noses are. They've got one of those cute little button noses that can handle it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's doesn't Photoshop Lightroom 5 fix that? Doesn't it have a de-stretchifier?
Yeah.
If you can angle buildings back the right way, can it straighten people's faces? Remove the distortion.
Yeah.
There was some, I can't remember, I saw a brief thing a week or so ago that I should have paid more attention to and I didn't, but there's some software companies come up with the claiming that they've invented a way to refocus photographs that you've stuffed up and either blurry through hand movement, blurry through focus, blurry through whatever, through movement, and to refocus them back to sharp. So it's going to sort of change the world, isn't it, really?
If they perfect it, absolutely.
If you stuff up a photo, if you get it to work, they stuff up a photograph and all of a sudden, bing, I can fix that.
Yeah.
And I can finally fix my Eugene Brown.
Your Eugene
You're
Brown.
You're supposed to say, what's my Eugene Brown? I was supposed to set you up for these things earlier. So I can finally fix my Eugene Brown.
What's your Eugene Brown?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I use the Eugene Brown moment in my work, in my Understand Your Camera workshops to point out awareness of numbers when shooting. Yeah, that if you don't know your numbers, you don't know how to shoot. You're not shooting properly. Yeah, and your total awareness of the numbers in front of you determine whether shots are going to work or not. And the classic example I use is I was walking through a New Jersey town a year or so ago. And I'm walking up the hill, and there's this 1760s church up on the hill on the left-hand side. I know it's 1760s because the sign at the front said it was 1760s. So I was reading that as I'm walking up the hill. As I go past the doorway, I look in the doorway, and there's this, I don't know, this guy, probably 800 or 900 years old, and he was ancient. And he was inside the doorway of this church. And there's an old African-American guy with a couple of foot-long grey beard, and he was wearing overalls, and he was sweeping the floor with a straw broom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, classic scene. Could have been from any time in history post 1760 when they built the church.
Yeah.
You know? So I've seen this and it's just, I've got to shoot this. So I popped inside and introduced myself and he said, I'm Eugene Brown, hence the Eugene Brown moment.
Right.
Because if he said his name was Don Johnson, it wouldn't quite make as much sense. Eugene Brown. I said, look, I just love this scene and you've got a great face. Can I take your photograph? And he's, no. I said, oh. Please. I'd really like to. And so he goes, okay, but one photo only. Yeah, he wasn't being aggressive. He was just a bit shy and a bit, not really into it. So in a little bit of pressure time wise, I've stepped out of the church. I've composed.
Yeah.
Got the shot right. I'm shooting manual, shooting spot metering. Got the exposure perfect.
Yeah.
Took the shot. Looked down and did the old chimping at the photo on the back of the screen because it was beautiful. Beautiful shot.
Yeah.
Walked in, shook his hand. As I'm walking up the street, chimping a bit more, I start to zoom in on the photo.
Yeah.
And it's just like 5% off with blur.
Oh.
Just the tiniest bit of hand movement.
Yeah.
Because I shot the bloody thing at 40th of a second.
Oh.
Now I have unsteady hands to start with.
Yep.
I'm shooting a heavy camera at the end. I was like day 12. I was on my way back to the airport. I'd just done 14 workshops in 11 days. So I was knackered. And I'm holding this big heavy camera with a 70-200 2.8 lens on, which is a lot of weight, and trying to shoot with unsteady hands at the best of time at a 40th.
Yeah, that's.
I was close, but no sitar, as they say in India. And so it was just off. Yeah, so that was my Eugene Brown moment . So, but yeah, if I could now go back and fix the Eugene Brown,
that'd be awesome.
Oh, it would be awesome. Yeah, because I only had the one shot to do it. I know why I stuffed it up. I mean, the exposure was perfect, but I was under time pressure, so I didn't take that fraction of a second just to look down and see what the number took to get my exposure right.
Yep.
And if I'd taken a fraction of a second, I would have bumped the ISO up.
Yep.
Got myself,
got to 100th of a second or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And just started shooting without a problem at all. But, it's a I'm glad I stuffed it up in a lot of ways.
Because
it's reminding you. Yeah, it reminds you. Even though I knew, I've always known it.
Yeah.
You still, obviously, you always keep attention to it. But also, it's a great anecdote to use at workshops that I wouldn't have if I didn't stuff it up. It's worth its weight in llama poo. I tell you, it's just...
Excellent.
So it's got good value in that.
Well, while we're speaking of things worth their weight in llama poo, Harry Mellos has asked on the Facebook page.
Harry, he's worth more than llama poo. Or is his question you're saying?
No, he's asking for some advice from you.
Oh, not for me.
He said, Glenn, how about a bit of an in-depth review on the Fuji, pros and cons? Thinking of seriously getting one. Need all the advice I can get. Cheers, boys.
Okay, Fuji X Pro 1 he must be talking about, the one I got my hands on a couple of weeks ago. You know, it's a love-hate relationship.
Oh, why?
I'm always honest. That's on all my sponsors. You know, you give me stuff, but I'm going to say what I think about it.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not going to, if someone asks, I'm never going to push something that is, you know, just for the sake of, you gave it to me sort of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so phenomenal, incredible sharpness.
Right.
Positive, obviously. That's not one of the negatives. Incredible low light performance.
Okay.
Great positive. On some lenses, bad focusing speed.
Oh, okay.
Processing speed when you've shot 3 or 4 images, ridiculously slow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just on that last point, though, are you using a high-speed card?
Yeah, I'm using SanDisk Ultra, so it's fast. Okay. It should be fast enough for,
Okay,
for 8 photo, not video.
Yep.
But you know, you take 3 or 4 photos, you got to wait 15 seconds for them to finish processing.
Wow.
You review them.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe 10. You know, it's like when you're sitting waiting for the kettle to boil. It seems a lot longer than it actually is. Yeah. It might be 5 seconds, but it seems
like
an age compared to what you're used to doing with. Yeah, yeah. So it seems an age when you want to make sure you've got the shot to actually know on whether you can go on to the next one. And they have the autofocus lock button in the stupidest place.
Oh, okay.
Basically, right where your thumb would go when you're holding the camera to your eye,
right,
to hold the camera.
Oh.
So you can knock it on without really being aware of it. And you spend the next 5 minutes, why the hell won't this thing focus?
Yeah, right.
So, you know, there's a couple of provisos to all that. No, I haven't used it that much yet, so that's as bad as in-depth as the goods and bads I've found so far. I know Fuji released a major firmware update yesterday. Was it the 24th today, is it? Was it the 26th? On the 23rd, so three days ago, which I haven't had time to download. I'm told that fixes mostly the focusing issues majorly fixed.
Right.
I don't know if that's also going to fix the write speed. You know?
I would imagine not.
Well, who knows? Yeah, this depends on what they're doing to it and how it's processing stuff.
Mm.
But it's going to make, and quite frankly, that's what I'm more concerned about, the focus speed than I am. Right speed, realistically, for the type of camera it is and for what you're... I'm not doing 8 frames a second shooting with the thing, you know, it's not what it's designed for. So I'm loving it and learning to... because it's a whole new world of shooting again, where you've got so used to modern digital SLRs, then all of a sudden you've got an aperture ring back on your lens again, which you've done for donkey's years, then not done for donkey's years. You forget about it. It's just...
Yep.
I keep spinning the wrong dial to change aperture because I'm just not used to doing it anymore.
Yeah, right.
So it's a matter of getting, like anything new, just getting familiar with the handling of it.
Yep.
You know?
So I'm assuming, of course, that you are shooting exclusively in JPEG.
Well, you know, I've been a bit slack and I haven't actually bothered turning the RAW off, so it's actually been shooting both.
Well, that would explain the slow write speed then.
Well, not really. Not really.
It's a modern SLR. 16 megapixel or 24 megapixel?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever it is, it doesn't. Never worries me. I'm never worried about megapixels. So
but that will affect the write speed because it's more data to write.
Oh, absolutely. But I still expect. But if you shoot with a Canon or Nikon, you can shoot 3 or 4 frames. I'm not talking in a second. I'm talking over a 2 or 3 second period, and not have to wait a few seconds to view the last image.
Right. Okay.
The write speed of those cameras is significantly faster.
Okay.
And I know it's significantly faster because I'm not shooting any differently as far as the amount of photos I shoot with this camera versus my other camera.
Yeah.
But my other cameras, I don't wait. This one, I do.
Right.
So, and even when I have shot RAW files in the past, the same problem, I've never felt delayed. I have if I shoot a lot of photos. Like if you're shooting a Canon 5D Mark II and you shoot it's full buffer, it's going to take some time to work its way through for sure. But not for 2 or 3 shots.
Have you dialed in any, you know, like increased saturation or increased contrast?
Nothing.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I haven't done anything to the point that I'm not even sure if you can actually turn off the autofocus lock button. You might, yeah, might even be able to go in the menu and turn that function off, so right. It's not a pain in the bum if you knock it. Yeah. So that's how little time I've had to live with it.
Right.
Yeah, over the last couple of weeks. Now, I've used it a bit, but not wow, an awful lot. Yeah. But these are my first up impressions. But I mean, the sharpness. Oh man, it is hard to beat. It is seriously, seriously sharp. I mean, stunning quality out of it.
So what are the lenses that came with it?
Well, they gave me a 60mm portrait and an 18mm wide.
Okay.
Which equates to, I don't know what the ratio is. It's 90mm, 85mm and 25mm, something like that.
Okay.
I've never actually... This is how non-technical I'm having, even bothered to look what the crop factor is on the camera. Right. Because it doesn't worry me. Yeah, I'll shoot what I see. Yeah, I don't shoot. Oh, this is a 1.7 crop factor. Therefore, this 18mm is really 22.7mm. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
What do I see?
Yep.
Yeah. What do I feel and what do I see? And that's, I don't care if it's 87mm or 93mm, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really no consequence to me. I see what I see, and if I like what I see, I'll shoot it. If I don't, I'll use something different or use a different lens.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But Harry, I would say, and whilst I love you, Mr. Fuji, I would say wait for the X-Pro 2.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I love the camera. The camera is awesome.
Yep.
I just think, it's the first one of its type they did of that style. And I'm quite sure, like the new XM1 that's just been announced this week, and some of the other X series, the next generation one that came along was significantly better. Wow. Because X-Pro 1 now is getting on to... I don't know, 16, 17 months old or more. And I just think the next model along will really take a quantum leap forward.
Okay.
There you are. Honesty as always.
Yep.
Yeah. As I say, I won't say anything to behind someone's back that I wouldn't say to their face. Fuji the other day asked me for my thoughts, and that's pretty much what I told him.
All right. Fair enough.
So, I'll always say, because, there's no point BSing people. You might as well tell them what you really think, and things can move forward from there, kind of thing. You know?
Exactly.
So, So, Harry, awesome, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got to say, if you've got time, a little bit of time, you're not in such a hurry, I think it'd be a wonderful camera to work. It's a great camera to make you slow down and think.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's just the fact of having to spin the dial in the front of your lens, the whole process is back to the older style of shooting. It does, it does change your feel quite a bit.
Yeah, right.
Now, I did just pick up today, I've just got a new camera strap sponsor.
Oh, okay.
The lovely folk at Joby.
Yeah.
I've just moved from R straps to Joby straps because they've got a bit more range and variety. But they've got this awesome new hand strap, which I literally just this evening attached to my X-Pro 1 in preparation for tomorrow's natural light portrait workshop. So I'm looking forward to having a hand strap on to sort of see how that changes the feel of the camera as well.
Okay, so does that mean it's just dangling off your wrist all day?
Yeah, well, but mostly with that camera, I've never used a strap anyway, so it's one step up from that anyway.
Normally, you're just kicking it along the ground in front of you and pick it up when you need it.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I mean, you get stuff for free, you don't value it. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of feels.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty excited about tomorrow's natural light workshop.
Why?
Not because the workshop's different. I'll be saying the same bad jokes to say every week. My model has got me excited.
Oh, who's your model?
67-year-old Chinese man.
Awesome.
With a great face. It's going to be a corker. I'm very excited.
And where did you find him? He was serving coffee at some coffee shop you visited.
Exactly. Local dumpling restaurant. No, one of my customers from has been to a few workshops says, my dad likes photography. I'm sure he'd love to come along and model for one of these things. I said, really? What's he look like? And he showed me a photo. I said, when can he come? When? Show me when. And so we've teed it up and he's come along tomorrow. It's going to be a ball.
Oh, fantastic.
I've been practicing my ni haos and my zaijians and my xiexies. Yeah, thank yous, goodbye and hello.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
all the important stuff. Yeah. So that's gonna be I'm looking forward to that. And so I've got the X Pro One all lined up with my portrait lens on. I've got my Canon gear with the portrait gear ready to go, and it's gonna be a fine workshop. The day's looking up, it's gonna be playing nicely weather wise, so we'll be able to get out and explore the world a little bit.
Fantastic. Cool. Now, we had what I thought was two listener emails to cover, but I've just realised, having a browse through one of them, that I've actually already covered this email, so there's no sense me covering it a second time. It was the one from Greg Anderson regarding smart collections, which we covered.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we covered that.
Which
yeah.
we did cover.
Didn't understand most of it, but...
but we have got another... email which came in today from Ken Dixon.
The El Presidente is El Presidente of Mount Gravatt Photographic Society in Queensland.
Okay. So he says, hi guys.
Good man, Ag.
First of all, congrats on a great podcast. I've been a listener from the start and I thoroughly enjoy having such high quality content that's Australian based. It's been.
You gotta love that, don't you?
You do.
That's nice.
It's been a great move bringing Glyn on board. His unique approach brings good humour to our passion. I tell you, Bruce, Glyn can really bring in a crowd, but ask him someday about the trip to Mount Gravatt Camera Club in Brisbane. Tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
What happened?
Whenever I travel somewhere and go to like a rural area or Brisbane, just reasonably rural, anywhere where, and if there's especially if I'm doing something for a local photographic group or club, if there's a chance to talk to the camera club, to their members, I'll always try and make an opportunity. So a couple of weeks' time when I'm up in Rockhampton, I'm doing workshops Saturday night and Sunday.
Right.
But on the Friday night, I'm doing a free talk to the camera club.
Fair enough.
Because I love talking at camera clubs and chatting, so...
Yep.
I did the same. I made the same offer. I was coming up to Bris Vegas to do some stuff for Mount Gravatt Photographic Society.
Yep.
And other people. And I said, no, I'd love to do a talk at the club. He goes, oh, we'd love to have you. Yeah, oh, no worries at all. And got it all organised. And we showed up and we helped them put up 200 chairs or something. I said, what's your normal attendance? He goes, oh, 80, 90 people. I said, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. So, you know, 5 minutes before starting time, there's me, there's Ken, and one or two other folk.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Oh, what?
So I've taken this photograph of like 150 empty chairs, and this one guy sleeping across one of them, just for a bit of fun.
Yeah,
and I think one other person showed up. There's like four people for the whole night.
Wow,
that was it.
What happened?
So you know,
did they hear in advance that you were coming?
Someone must have said my name. And, well, I'm not going there for that. It's a smart ass who doesn't take things seriously. Not going there for that. Now, photography is a serious business.
Yeah. Wow.
You get that at some camera clubs. They don't always take to my humour for some reason. They tend to be the ones with the average age of 74. But
yeah, right.
They tend not to quite get the. They either don't get the humour or they can't hear it. What? Speak up, Sonny! So that was of course, you know, you stand up and do the talk anyway, but I got all four to sit in the front row, so it felt a bit more crowded. very funny stuff. So yeah, we never let Ken down for that one. That was very funny.
Anyway,
but he did ask something far more important than
He said, anyway, to my question, I have two sons aged 8 and 12. Both boys have a good interest in photography, as can be expected from a mad, keen dad like me. My approach so far with boys has to focus on the softer skills like composition, colour and light, etc., rather than the full technical side of things. So far, this has paid good dividends, but we'll be moving shortly into apertures, etc., with the oldest boy. I'd be interested to hear any thoughts you had about teaching and encouraging photography with younger kids. It's amazing how different they see things. It's even taught this old dog a few new approaches for subjects and compositions. Keep up the great show. Cheers, Ken Dixon.
Well, I think first and foremost, you've got to live by the very old adage of never work with children or animals. So you don't teach kids anything. Keep away from them. You can't teach your... It's like trying to teach a family member to drive a car. You can't do it. It's just going to do your head in. Get someone else to teach them.
Yeah.
make it someone else's responsibility. But you've I know you've got an older child. Is this something you've had experience with?
Look, he kind of... Yeah, he was interested for a while, but I think maybe yeah. I went the wrong way. Maybe what Ken said is where I went wrong. Maybe, you know, because I was trying to teach Max about apertures and shutter speeds and ISOs, and maybe that was the wrong approach.
Well, because it's boring stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess maybe. But that's a good tip for other people out there thinking of doing it. Maybe, yeah, as Ken's starting point is pretty good as far as keep it to the absolute simple things. I guess the other thing is with kids is they don't overthink things like we adults do.
No, they don't.
So you can tell them something fairly simplistic and they just take it at face value.
Yep.
So, when I'm teaching people in my Understand Your Camera workshop, I try and use the same approach of keeping it really bare bones to the absolute simplest possible way of phrasing something, because that way hopefully it'll stick. Where if you try and overcomplicate things by talking technical, it just does their head in.
Yeah.
So with something like aperture, as an example, I always say small number, small focus, big number, big focus.
Yeah.
What's the story? And set people off with a challenge to think about that. Don't even think about the numbers themselves, because realistically the numbers aren't important anyway.
Yep.
I can hear whole roomfuls of photographers. It was half of our 7 listeners just fell off their chair. that realistically, does it matter if it's on 5.6 or 6.3? It doesn't actually make a difference. What effect does it have on the photograph is all that matters.
Yeah.
To me, mm-hmm. is the end result. I don't care what number I use,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's the right number.
Yep.
Yeah. And people will say, well, what's the right settings? Well, it's always the right ones, the ones you need it to be to get the shot to work.
Yeah.
So you send people out with the goal of small number, small focus, big number, big focus, go play.
Yeah.
Try them, but see what happens, yeah? And I reckon if it was kids, I reckon one of the best things to ever get kids excited about would be playing with time. I'm sure kids would just love that. I'll get to that with my kid, my oldest, in a few years' time. Just go and shoot cars going past at night with the headlights at slow shutter speeds.
Yeah.
I know kids get a buzz out of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, right.
And that introduces them to the joy of the end result, not so much how they got there.
Right.
Because they'll start to grasp the how they got there by the joy of the end result.
Yeah.
Yep. If you've got two kids and Ken does. Yeah, I'll be doing stuff like getting the front kid in focus and the back kid out of focus, blurring out the little brother, and then vice versa, and swapping, focusing on the back kid. Just because it's fun, I've just blurred out my brother. you're taking a technical thing and turning it into fun.
Yep.
So when I was in Vivid recently, at the Vivid Festival in Sydney recently as MC, I had to introduce a lady who was talking about a project, a children's photographic education project she runs, which I thought might be appropriate to Ken's thoughts, at least, to have a look at. And the project, the website is called the website is littlesideclick.com.
Mm-hmm.
Little sidekick. And it's basically this Melbourne photographer has come up with a way of teaching her children how to shoot, and she's put it together as a 16-week class for kids. And it goes through everything, but in fun and imaginative ways that kids will enjoy. And with the theory at the end of it, they have not only an understanding of the technical, but also the aesthetic. Yeah, they'll understand light.
Yep.
They'll understand how to play with light. They'll understand the value of all the important stuff in photography. So that could be something. And the first 3 lessons out of the 16 of 3.
Okay.
So, maybe for him just to go and have a play around with those and see what he thinks of them might be a good way to go.
Yeah.
But I think, teaching kids the effects of what cameras can do as opposed to the technical of what they can do is something they can relate to straight away. The beauty of digital, they can see the results straight away and it will engage with them. Yeah. And then maybe make some real world scenarios about explaining. So get a bucket, an old milk container full of water, punch a small hole in one and a big hole in the other. Yeah, big aperture, small aperture. Look how much the water pours out of this one. Look how slowly it comes out of this one. And see how empty how quickly they drain. And stuff that they can visualize. Okay, bigger hole, more stuff pouring out.
Yep.
Bigger the hole in the lens, more light pouring in. Yeah. Go and fill the kitchen sink with them. Yeah. Put the tap on full bore, put the tap on drip, drip, drip. See how long it takes to fill. Same end result, different ways of getting there. Yeah. It's just ways of playing with photography as opposed to. The technical, because the technical, I find the technical boring. well, I do because it's only a means to an end.
Yep.
The technical is only a means to an end. The end is the end product. The joy is achieving the end result, but the real joy for me is setting up the shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is visualizing and making it happen. The numbers I have to use on my camera aren't really important. They have to be the right ones. but they'll be whatever they are.
Yeah.
And then it's the end result that is achieved by that. But so you have to start to grasp and get an understanding of the numbers, obviously. But the quicker you can forget about them, the better off you'll be.
Yeah.
You know, get them into the subconscious rather than the conscious brain and let that worry about it.
Yeah.
It does a far, far better job than our conscious brain does.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's helped him or not at all. But yeah, any other things you want to add?
No, I'm enjoying listening to you because you've obviously got that side of it much better in your head than I had, you know, because I clearly went completely the wrong way with Max, you know, with trying to teach him all the technical side of it and probably just bored him stupid.
Yeah. And my wife wants me to teach her photography.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm equating that to teaching a 6-year-old. I speak loud enough, she can usually hear the podcast in the other room, so I'll just sort of toss that one out for her. But yeah, it's the same. I'm reticent to do that because it's the same thing as trying to teach your wife how to drive a car. You know, you'd be bald by the end of the week.
Yeah.
Not only because of the stress we put on ourselves, not because of their competence or lack thereof.
Yeah.
You know, but but with kids, I think, and I can only take it from how I can sort of visualize how I want to teach my two girls if they want to learn. Once again, there's no obligation, they have to. But it's good. My daughter, both of my kids already like taking photos at 6 and 2. My 2-year-old loves to shoot. But at some point, it's going to have to get down to not just shooting, but understanding what you're shooting and how you're shooting and why you're shooting it.
Yeah.
And that's going to have to be all that visualization stuff, that fun. Yeah. We've got to put the fun into funtography or whatever it is, you know. But yeah, I'll just try and find as many different ways to play with the camera, to make the camera do cool. You know, just go in the backyard with sparklers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just play with them, long shutter speed. What kind of patterns can we make? Can we make this year's Christmas card? It's just stuff that you can do that makes photography fun.
Yep.
And if you can keep all that aspect, I hope that will keep the kids engaged. You know, yeah. Everyone tells me that kids, when they get to a certain age, are impossible to stay connected and communicating with. So I don't know. Hopefully, Ken's kids aren't quite at that stage yet.
Yeah.
At 10, we sure hope not.
Yeah.
But that's kind of my visual idea of, but never having actually done it because, you know, I've never taught any children how to shoot.
Hmm.
I can't say if it'll work or not.
Maybe there's an opportunity for a new workshop for you.
Oh, never, ever. Never work with kids or animals, do it. A friend of mine, a woman I've met through dropping the kids off at school in the morning, is a phenomenal baby photographer.
Oh, okay.
You know, she's award-winning, Australian World War, all this sort of blah, blah, blah stuff. Phenomenal. But she shoots babies. And I say, well, how the hell can you do that? Doesn't it do your head in? I said, how long do you have a shoot go for? She goes, 4 hours. I said, why? Well, you know, the kid's got to be fed twice through that. They're going to have a sleep. Maybe nappy change 3 times. That's not a shoot. That's a horror story. You know? If I want that kind of garbage, I'll go back home and have another kid. The people say, can't you run a baby workshop? No, never ever. Yeah.
You couldn't pay me enough.
Exactly. I'm like a bankrupt hospital, Bruce.
Okay.
Why? Yeah, no patients.
Right.
Yeah. No patience.
Nice.
Couldn't do it. Oh, dear, oh, dear. So, Ken, the challenge now is we want to report back in a month or two and see if what sort of tricks you've tried. But also Google up kids' photography classes. I did come across some stuff when I was researching your question. It was a quick Google search. And there was some stuff out there that had some free lesson plans and stuff that if you wanted to sort of take it to another step along, that might, once again, because it's not coming from dad, it might be taken up a little bit differently. So look up there and see if you can find some other stuff on teaching kids photography.
Mm-hmm.
And you might find this in there. I often find when a parent says something, it's different when someone else says it to them.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Who knows? Worth a shot. But also check out Little Side Click.
Okay, I will put that in the show notes. Just looking at recent posts by others on the Facebook page, there was a couple of things that came out of the last episode. Adam Davidson wrote, after listening to episode 228, I went through my archives and found this image I shot with a Canon 400mm f4 lens, so equivalent of 640mm, on my ES-10D about 10 years ago. Shooting from a boat with a long prime lens is quite a challenge, but also a lot of fun. And it's not a bad image, if I may say so. Adam, you did a great job there of, you know, for that focal length and shooting from a boat.
No, so the photo's pretty average.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, but okay.
The fact that it's sharp is what he's being excited about.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But here's the thing. You take 50 shots. He's not going to show you the 49 blurry ones, is he? To show you the one good one.
Yeah, well,
photographer shows you the bad photos. Yeah. I know, just for those who don't know, I know Adam very well, so I'm allowed to pick on him really badly. And he does help me out at workshops from time to time, so I'm allowed to pick the living daylights out of him.
Of course.
Yeah, so show us the shots on either side of that one, Adam. I want to see the sequence of, like, three or four shots. If they're all as sharp as that, I'll believe it was you.
And there was also a mention from a guy called David Jones, I assume no relation to the retailer. Bruce, you mentioned in EP 228 getting a RAW converter for Sony for your Galaxy Tab. I have both a Galaxy Tab and a Sony DSLR and looking for suggestions. The app that I chose was called RAW Vision by Cake Fuzz. And it was, like I said, it was about $5. Certainly didn't quite have the heavy lifting capabilities of a Lightroom, but for what I needed on my holiday of just being able to pull the raw images in, do a quick process, crank out a JPEG for uploading to Facebook, it did the job. So, yeah.
I was wondering if you can answer that one, because I remembered it from the other day. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing what you can find out there in the world. No, before we go, I've got two other things.
Oh, okay.
Four things that we can poke a stick at, dude.
Cool.
I've just got one word for you.
Right.
Pets Val.
What the?
Pets Val.
Pets Val.
P-E-T-Z-V-A-L. Okay. I'm excited, Bruce.
What
I'm excited. And you know, it doesn't take much at all to get me excited, but it's got me. Well, the Pets Val was a portrait lens back in the 1840s, 1850s. An old brass lens that used to go on the cameras over the day.
Okay.
And it had a very particular look to it.
Right.
Where the photos had the out of focus blur had kind of a painterly look to it.
Okay.
So the actual main subject was sharp, but the background had this very unusual bokeh.
Yeah.
Bokeh, those in the know. The blurry our stuff, focus stuff in the background.
Yeah.
Well, the Lomography people, the Lomo company, are bringing it back to life. They're bringing it out soon.
Okay.
As a new lens for Canon, Nikon.
Wow!
So it's on Kickstarter. It's on Kickstarter at the moment. If you don't know Kickstarter, anyone, that's a crowdsourcing thing where you have a project, you put it up there, people donate money towards it. Well, their project was going for 30 days.
Yeah.
They've got 28 days to go.
Yeah.
They wanted to raise $100,000.
Yeah.
They're already over $500,000 committed, so they're fivefold over thing. So they're going to be bringing out this thing, this lens, and I've got to tell you, it looks like sex on a stick. It looks good. Not only is it the funkiest looking lens, can you see it? Have you seen it?
It looks great.
The look is going to be very different. Yeah, very unusual.
Wow.
And I don't know how much the thing's going to cost, but it looks very, very cool. You know me and my gadgets. Yeah. So that's something kind of cool I came across this week that got me a little excited.
Yeah, right. So how is it constructed differently from the lenses we're used to shooting with?
If you go on the Kickstarter page?
I am.
Okay. There's a whole blurb on the lens that goes through how the elements are laid out versus traditional or modern and all this sort of stuff. There's quite a lot of detail on there, which for those who are interested, kickstarter.com, just type in Lomography or Petzval, P-E-T-Z-V-A-L, and it'll come up. And if you want to look into it or maybe donate some money, I think if you give them $1,000, you get one of the first six or one of the first 10 made and get your own name engraved on it.
Wow.
How cool would that be?
Yeah, I'll have links in the show notes anyway.
Yeah, so that's just a cool little thing, I thought.
Yeah,
and for those gadget hungry people among us that haven't been all satisfied by finding enough gadgets, I thought we could maybe look at that one too. And speaking of gadgets, I ran my Elinchrom lighting class last week for the owner of Elinchrom, who was out.
Yeah,
and he was talking about the history of Elinchrom to the crowd. And he was talking about the first studio light that the company made.
Right.
And it was explaining all how much light it put out and blah, 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 blah. And it only weighed 300 kilograms.
What?
Now, if I ever hear another photographer complain about the amount of gear they've got to carry around and this one light weighs 300 kilos. Unbelievable.
Well, because back then, men were men.
Exactly. And we know why horses were nervous, because they had to carry these things on their back. Imagine 300 kilos for a studio light.
That is crazy
stuff. Yeah. Wow. And I was fascinated by that little snippet from the night. It was kind of amazing to visualize. This is how far we've come in miniaturization and over the years. And we're only talking, it was post World War II.
Yeah.
It was in the 50s, early 60s, something like that. So we've come a hell of a long way in not that long period of time.
So did you end up getting yourself a fog machine to take along?
Well, I have them. I took it, but I didn't use it. You know, I just figured, it's just going to cause more dramas than it's worth.
Fair enough.
And because what ended up happening, the space that I thought I was going to be shooting in, I thought I'd have a reasonable stage space to shoot. So I sort of visualized some of the stuff I was going to be shooting. When it all came said and done, when the size of the screen was put up and actually got the lights on the stage and the model on the stage, the actual studio space itself was smaller than the average bathroom. Yeah, we're talking 6 foot deep by about 5 foot wide. Was it? So you could say a little limited for space, just a touch, which sort of kind of cramped the creative options somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was, but it did show you can take good studio photos in the bathroom should you need to. Backdrop, two lights, softboxes, modeling stool, you. Actually, I was out of the bathroom. I was out the front, out the door of the bathroom, shooting into the bathroom. But it was some seriously tight space. Yeah. It was a tough shoot. And then we had all sorts of technical issues where for a while the triggers didn't want to fire the lights. So I was trying to show lots of people, this is the before shot, before the lights go off. Now let's see what the actual lights are doing to light the subject. So we've got this massive screen. Everything's pitch black. So we had a few little tech issues, which always adds to the fun of a live event like that in front of hundreds of people and live tethered to a computer, and then our Wi-Fi wouldn't work for our Wi-Fi app on the you would assume that when Elancrum give you an iPad with their app on it, they actually would have got the settings set right and to actually work, and they hadn't.
Oh no!
So the Wi-Fi kept dropping out because they hadn't set the IP address up properly.
Oh, okay.
So we figured that out after the event.
Oh no!
So it was an hour and a half of shooting of stress. But we got I don't know, probably demonstrated five or six lighting setups.
Yeah.
And I came away with four shots I really, really kind of like.
Oh, good.
Which in that sort of environment, that sort of, and there's pretty much one from each setup, which is all you really need from a setup is one nice shot.
Hmm.
So considering the constraints and everything we worked under, I was quite happy.
Excellent.
I like the shots I got. Yeah. So they're on my Facebook page, as in CPW Facebook page, if anyone wants to see them.
Cool.
And that's it. That's been my week. Looking after sick wife, shooting with technical problems. And I ran a Flash Part 2 workshop last week, which was a lot of fun. We had a great, incredibly buff guy. It was his first ever paid modeling shoot. And he was great fun.
Oh, okay.
Because when they're new to the game like this, they don't know that you're not supposed to insult them as much as I do, or make them do stand on their head and twirl. And all the stuff I was trying to make him do, he thought that was just part of the job, So we had him doing all sorts of crazy stuff. We got some great shots of him too. So that was a lot of fun.
Is this the guy with the basketball?
Yeah, and the really buff guy. We called him the Jimmy by then. Yeah, because his name was Jimmy, and I kept referring to him as the Jimmy. And there's a Seinfeld episode, I think it's called the Jimmy, where a guy speaks about himself in first person all the time. Right. And so we started getting him to refer to himself as the Jimmy in first person.
Right.
And whilst I think of it, I might as well pimp something else out.
Yeah.
I'm doing my first workshop in Ocean Grove, which is a country Victorian seaside town, hence the ocean bit,
right.
Ocean Grove, next Sunday, and they've got a couple of places left. That's for Ocean Grove photo and video. So if anyone lives down that way and wants to go to a workshop, I think there's two or three places left, one or two places, something like that. There, so.
I just want to say, absolutely love the silhouette shot you did with the blue wall and the obviously
on the basketball?
A snoot or a grid on the basketball.
Yeah, so that's a lesson in how to use light, to focus light. To let's put that up in the show notes so we can let people see what we're talking about. Put it on the page, whatever you want to do. When you're learning what you can do with flash, it's also learning the how much you can you control, how small can you control the light, what little things can you do with it.
Yeah.
You don't have to light up big areas, you can light up very small areas. So that's a two flash shot.
Yeah.
So we've got one firing up onto the wall and missing him completely, so it's not lighting him.
Yep.
And then another one coming across, so that's going across his front.
Yep.
And the other flash comes across his back and misses all of his body except for the basketball he's holding. So really, that's a gridded shot.
Yeah,
but it's a really finite little bit of light, just for.
And on top of that, you've got the beautiful color contrast between blue of the wall and the orange of the ball, which
exactly.
Is
so playing with colors, so you're playing with different colored gels as well to contrast those colors.
That's great.
Yeah, so thanks, Marty. It's a lesson. I think it's powerful lessons in what is the potential of flash? What can you do with flash? And it's really only limited by your imagination.
Yeah. No, that's
gorgeous. The whole point of the Flash 2 day is an ideas day, effectively, is to throw up ideas and visualize what can be done with Flash. It's not just what we assume Flash can be, the way we think of Flash necessarily. So, I do enjoy that workshop. It's a tough one because it takes quite a bit of setting up to try and get that light to only just hit the basketball.
Yep.
And that day, I think there were six people at the workshop, which is all I keep Flash 2 to a small number because of how complex it is.
Yep.
That guy's going to try and hold that ball, which, he's a muscular guy. And the ball doesn't weigh that much, but if you've got to keep in exactly the same position for like 10 minutes, that thing starts to feel like a weight of lead.
Because
if he moves it an inch, it's no longer in the light as much.
Yeah,
so it's really, really delicate lighting stuff. But it's a heap of fun. That's once again, that's all part of the joy of photography is the learning how to create and get dramatic with stuff. It's lots and lots and lots of fun.
Yeah. So, well done.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Alrighty, well, we shall wrap it for this week.
We're almost on an hour, so we did pretty good. We
managed to crap
our way
on
through that. people would even think we knew we had something planned to this week, and it seemed like we were a well-researched, well-run team. You know what the problem is, of course?
What's that?
Well, it's Friday night now.
Yep.
We record again on Tuesday. How in the hell are we going to think of something to talk about next week?
Exactly.
It's only a couple of days.
Exactly.
I'll make sure I take lots of photos of my old Chinese guy too.
Send us some questions on Monday, people.
Please,
so that we've got something to talk about. All right, mate. Well, you have a good weekend.
You have a weekend too.
And we'll speak with you on Tuesday night.
See you, mate.
See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutterzing, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzingpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shutterzingpodcast.com.